At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 507, 2024, Year in Review. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we're back, and we are taking a long and deep look at 2024, everything that happened in the board gaming industry. Everything that happened in gaming, everything that happened with us on the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to give you our rundown, our thoughts on the year. And as we do every year, we're going to look back at our most anticipated games of the year, which we recorded back in January. And we're going to let you know, did we play it? Did we like it? Did it come out at all? Was it terrible? Did it disappear off the face of the earth? Who knows? So there are a whole bunch of games on this list, 44 games and 13 expansions or re-releases. A little bit of a rapid fire, obviously, so the podcast isn't 5 hours long, but we have played a bunch of these, so we're going to talk about what we think, and just a spoiler, some of these we'll be like, we'll talk about it more next week when we do the awards.
Yes. So. Yeah, it's been a very good year for tabletop gaming. I think we can say that, right? I think that's a fair appraisal of that.
I just did my top 10 list, and I was, you know, I feel like I didn't play as many games as I have in past years, just because of life and a lot of focus on like board game academics, like a lot of really good games, but not like the huge volume that we've previously been known for. But like my top 10 list, I was like, five of these are in my top 100,
nice.
Maybe six. And sure. I just played another game last night where I'm like, this might have to go on the list too. And it might end up in the top 100. So very, very good year, at least in terms of stuff I like. So I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, it's been a very good year. It's been a very diverse year for tabletop gaming, and there's a lot of interesting surprises along the way. So we're going to take a look at those and just crunch the numbers a little bit, talk about it a little bit, and, you know, reflect a little bit. It's that time of year. It's getting a little colder, you know, chilling out, relaxing. You know, the holidays are coming and going. So stick with us on that. But Anthony, before we get into all that fun, what's happening with BGA?
Yeah, so we got a couple things I wanted to throw your way. First up, head on over to the Discord channel. This had previously been backers only. We've opened it up to everybody. We're going to have backers only channels within Discord to kind of maintain that benefit. But the reason we've done this is because we have a new community manager, Kelber, who's doing an awesome job. Mm-hmm. He's putting up a bunch of stuff in there, including some tournaments over on Board Game Arena. So we're kind of piloting that and seeing, you know, how many people show up and what types of games everybody wants to play. But he's going to be running some tournaments there. So like right now, like when you're listening to this, there are tournaments that have already started for Ark Nova and Castles of Burgundy. You can check those out. But there'll be more in the new year, and Discord is where you're going to find out about them, as well as any new contests, any new content coming up, any new opportunities. It's going to be in the Discord channel. We got, you know, channels in there as well for like non-game stuff that we might talk about, like movies, TV conversations, book clubs, whatever. So, check out the Discord. The link is in the, show notes.
Ooh, show notes. And yeah, I'll take us directly there.
I'll take you directly there and add you to the server
where I like that.
You'll be dropped into the welcomes and introductions and be asked to say hi.
Hello. Welcome to the table. Everyone is welcome as always. So
exactly.
please join us because there's a lot of fun happening. And the more we get to know each other, the less anonymous we are, ironically.
Yeah, I know. We're trying to undo ourselves here.
The last episode's going to be like, everyone knows us now. It's done.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
We're going to like, one of us will be like, Good Morning America. The next day, the podcast shuts down. Like, sorry, guys. We're famous now. We got to cut it down.
It reaches inevitable conclusion that the more we try to stay away from it, the more we got pulled into it.
So, right.
Yeah. Black is white, up is down, cat is dog. Yeah. It's all that kind of fun stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. So definitely check that out. It's going to be fun. And yeah, Kelber, he's awesome. Hop in there and say hi. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is Patreon bonus episodes. So last year at the end of the year, I did like my own personal top 10s and I just recorded episodes of those. Several people asked, like, are you doing that again? And I'm like, oh, sure. Yeah, I will do that again. So the bonus episode this week or last week, I guess when you're hearing this, is I did my top 10 movies and TV shows of 2024. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out as I run through all the good stuff I watched this last year. Next week, I'm going to have my top 10 games because we're going to talk about it on the episode from the BGA Awards. We don't generally announce our own top 10 list on that show. So I will share those kind of separately. It'll also be on the website if you don't feel like listening, but definitely listen and support us on Patreon. And then 2 weeks after that, I'll have my top 10 video games. So check all those out. And we have some other cool stuff planned for bonus episodes in the future.
Yeah, no, that's a great opportunity to support the podcast. And if you're on there or if you connected, also a really good way to give a gift to others, because the more they know about tabletop gaming, the more likely they are to play tabletop games. And if there is a wish for this holiday season, it's we want to get more people to the table so we can get more games to the table.
Right.
So share the podcast, share the social media, and join us all on patreon.com/BGA.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony, so that's what we're up to. Let's talk about what our listeners are up to. What's their question of the week?
All right, question of the week this week, I had a fun one, is if your local library could only shelve 3 board games...
It'd be a terrible library.
It'd be a terrible library, it's true. Hey, every library I've been to had none, so 3 would be like, hey, look, they have some games.
Actually, there is a library that I go to for game days, and they only have 2 board games. First, I heard they have a board game section, and I was like, oh my God, they have a board game section. And they only had 2 board games, and they weren't even punched. And the 2 board games were Munchkin and X-Wing Miniatures Game, the base set. And I was just like, sure.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Someone donated those, and they were like, yeah, it's made of paper. Why not?
Yeah, that's a thing. I'm just like, that's...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. I just remember going to a library when I was in high school, back in Idaho, and they'd gotten in some video games. Somebody must have donated them. But they were like the most violent games that you could get at the time. It was like the new Mortal Kombat for the PlayStation 2. It was like all the Grand Theft Auto games. And I was like, I don't know if this is what you want to have on the shelves, but hey, what do I know? my mom wasn't thrilled with that. All right. So the goal here, you're helping your library get their start with a board game collection. Which 3 games do they start with? So it's not just like what 3 games you start with for anybody. It's specifically for a library that serves a broad population. Mm-hmm. So over on Patreon, we had a few people answer. David says Azul as my easy strategy game with surprising depth. Then sure. King of Tokyo for a fun dice chucking game with lots of back and forth.
Nice.
Animal Upon Animal as an easy dexterity game that is good for kids.
Yes.
Good
trio. 3 great choices.
Yeah. Drew says Cascadia. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, simple, even a bit thematic. The Mind, cooperative and bridges in all those car junkies.
As long as it's not the first version of the Mind.
Yeah. and then Can't Stop. With a dice tower, this push-your-luck game has sucked in many a non-gamer.
Yes.
Can't Stop would be great. Robert says, Splendor Duel, 7 Wonders, and maybe Acropolis. I was thinking that you'd want games that play better at various player counts, because not everyone has a ton of friends to play with.
Sure.
Not too many pieces, because if it's getting loaned out, you're more likely to find something missing.
Ah, smart.
Yeah, so thinking very utilitarian there, which it's a good to think for the library. Over on Facebook, a bunch more answers. We have Max says Cascadia, Ticket to Ride, Calico, or Azul. We have Dave, a friend of the show, says Ticket to Ride, Telestrations, Codenames. James says Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, Codenames. So, we've seen a theme here. Joe says Ticket to Ride, Just One, and Century, preferably the Golem edition.
I agree with that.
Masur says Crokinole, which I guess they're not loaning that out, but that would be a cool thing to have in the library. Splendor and Rummy Cube.
Rummy Cube's good.
Yeah. Matthew says Catan, Ticket to Ride, and Carcassonne.
Okay, it's right down the middle. Got it.
Bryant says Ticket to Ride, Codenames, and Dixit.
Mm.
And then Matt says Dominant Species, Nucleum, and Roads and Boats.
I want to go to that library. That's my library.
Matt, I think you're a little aspirational, but I love that library too, but people are going to loan those out and be like, what did I just do?
That's right.
So I think the general takeaway here is most people feel like they need to be gateway-ish, but like diverse in that sense. Like kid-friendly, but not exclusively so.
Yeah, I think there's, and we talked about this a lot, there's a lot of games out there that have hidden challenges to them, where like scoring might be challenging, or the components physically, or color blindness might be an issue, or language independence you certainly want to shoot for. Cards can be a problem, because cards could easily get lost without anyone knowing. So things that are chunky, or tiles, or dice is probably to your betterment.
Right. Yeah. Like you really got to think in terms of accessibility, which I think as a librarian would generally do that. It's their job. But librarians don't always have the background in games.
Sure.
That we would necessarily. So I don't know if you're pestering your local library to pick up some games, maybe check out these lists.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Thanks, everybody. All right. Well, that's everyone's saying out there in the world. Anthony, it is that time. It is this place. It is the year-end review for 2024. Let's talk some games, bro.
Yeah, let's do it. It's a weird year. Not a weird year, a good year.
I would still say it's a weird year.
It's always a weird year, I guess.
I mean, it's. I guess we'll go through it at the end. We'll see, like, just we'll make a general kind of idea of where this kind of ranks, more or less, as far as above or below. But it's been, I don't know, like, there's some bangers in here. There's some Kickstarter, you know, deluxe that came out. There's definitely a lot of little small games that were a little bit underneath the radar. I don't think any game dominated the tables. And I think that's one of the things I always look for when I go to board game conventions. Is there a game that's being played everywhere? And typically in the past, you will see a game that's played everywhere. I did not see a game that was dominating the tables this year.
Yeah, I feel like there's a few games that people wanted to be that game, but the things got in the way of it. And I think this is the Kickstarter thing you keep coming back to, right?
Yes.
Like, we have games like everybody loved Andromeda's Edge. The box is enormous. You're not going to carry that around. I didn't see a single copy being played at the convention because it's too big.
Yes.
Arx, brilliant game, but it doesn't feel complete unless you have that giant box expansion, which requires a similar group of people. It's not really a pick up and play type of game. Dune, War for Arrakis. I love that game, but it's a giant two-player game. It's like everything's so niche now.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to know. Like, in this game, you know, you're not going to have something like Scythe. I'm like, okay, you can play with like 2 to 7 players and you can set it up anywhere. And it's, you know, it's easy to teach. We don't have one of those this year.
Yeah. I mean, that was what Jeff was talking about in our last episode about complexity, just for the complexity's sake.
Right.
And I think a lot of games indulge in that, which is fine if the game can carry it. But a lot of times it's just complexity for complexity's sake.
And it's not even that it like makes the game a problem or bad or anything. It just makes it less accessible. And when a game's less accessible, you don't have like one single game that everybody's like banging on about.
Yeah. And I think you're right, Anthony, too, because you know, when we were at PAX, gigantic game room, like endless tables. And I think I saw one version of Unconscious Mind, but I brought that to the convention myself.
Right.
With the big box thing with all the pieces in it. It is a beast to carry. Yeah. Like, it's surprisingly heavy. So I do think we're at a more or less bubble point where if you can't travel with it in a reasonable way, it's kind of a challenge.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where I'm at. I'm kind of tired of it. Like, all these games are too big. I've just been playing SETI the last like week or so, and it's a big-ish box, but like big in like 2014 sense. In the 2024 sense, it's a perfectly normal, reasonable size box that has a lot of stuff in it. It's mm-hmm. still a big sprawling game, but it's not like this ridiculous overwrought thing. Which it's not even that I have a problem with that. It just makes it impossible to carry it around. So I don't know if this year is like the inflection point where people are finally being like, really, guys, really with the box? Like,
not yet. I don't think it's there yet.
I guess we have to wait and have like one of these giant Kickstarters that crash and burn, maybe, where people are like, no, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, we had a little bit with the revamp of Defenders of the Realm, which we'll talk about in a minute.
That crash and burn.
They kind of had to go, oh, this is a problem.
Yeah.
And we need to kind of rethink this. I think you still need and want the big box. I think you still need and want all the deluxe components. I just think we have to think that the games are about playing games with people, and not everyone plays games at home.
Right.
So there has to be some sort of module portable option where you can pull a separate box out of a thing and it be fully playable, not partially playable, fully playable.
So, yeah, exactly. That's what I really appreciate about Arx. Like, they split it up. You had just like I brought that box with me to Dex Light, and I left the giant campaign expansion at home.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have brought all those with me. It's too much. So agreed. That was nice.
Well, Anthony, we had a list. It was a very fine list. It was checked twice by a large man with a giant beard. I won't say who it is. It's not, you know, it could be Santa, could not be Santa. I don't know.
Yeah,
but he did check it twice. And so why don't you start running us down our list?
All right, let's do it. So like I said, these are the games that were on our most anticipated games list from the beginning of the year. If you want to listen to that episode, it's 457. Came out on, I don't know, I think it came out the day after New Year's. I don't remember if I posted it on New Year's or the day after, but it was the very first episode of the year.
So they can listen to our foolishness of just anticipation and desire and acquisition disorder?
Yeah.
Yeah, and now listen to this and go, they were so wrong.
Yeah, and then in 2 weeks, we're going to do it again. For next year.
There you go.
It's an endless cycle that we're stuck in.
That's right.
We do this every year. It is fun to look back. Sometimes it's sad, but mostly it's fun.
It's fun, yeah.
Yeah. So first up, we had Andromeda's Edge.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that both of us backed, which is very rare, because... Mm-hmm. You don't back very much, and I have severely cut back on my own backing.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like one where like we're both super excited. It's Dwellings of Elder Vale, but in space. Can't wait for it. It actually showed up this year, which is amazing. I think we both like this pretty well, right?
Yeah, it was. I think it met every expectation. That's kind of hard to say, considering the fact that like there was a lot of expectations, because Dwelling of Elder Vale was a great game. And then, like, immediately out of print.
Yeah.
So this
still
was,
out of print.
Yeah. And then it came back in, then it was out, and then came back in. Like, they're releasing it, like, one copy at a time or something, their print mm-hmm. runs, which is challenging, to say the least. So this was really exciting to get to the table, and also reminded us what Dwellings was, which is basically a worker placement game.
Yeah. But cool.
Yeah, but cool. No, yeah.
No, it's a great game. My big issue with it is the box is too big. Really, that's it.
Sure,
that's hard to lug around. Number two is Arx. This was the new Cole Worley game. It came out right in the middle of the summer. Shipped to backers. It's out to everybody now. You can find it anywhere. And base game is good, solid. We enjoyed it. I think not quite to the level of like a Root, but. It's the expansion that really blows it out. And I don't think we ever fully officially reviewed this game because we still have not played that campaign expansion,
mm-hmm.
The Blighted Reach. So I've played the base game 2 or 3 times now, including that first time when I played with you and Will. But I have not circled back to this in the full-blown thing because I haven't gotten a group together to do it. So similar to Oath, which I never reviewed because I never really got a full thing going with that, I have not yet reviewed Arx because of that.
Sure. I didn't back this, but it was very hard not back because it seemed like certainly epic space battling. And again, in that kind of Root universe. And it, for me, at least, it doesn't live up to Root.
No.
And that was kind of disappointing, but certainly it has its own sense of itself. And it really, it's its own game.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost challenging. We've talked about this with other companies, you know, like the T series of games from Board and Dice, like somehow the shadow just is too far, it casts too far on other games.
Right.
So it kind of messes with the expectations, but a good game.
Yeah, and it's done well for them. It's just not like Root levels. And Root levels, yeah, like, that's an obscene level. So.
Well, I think that's what people looked at when Arx came out. Yeah. They were like, it's going to be like Root. It's going to be this big as Root. And it's like, No, it's going to be its own thing. It's still going to be big, but not Root big.
Yeah, like if you want to play the game to its fullest, it costs like $100. And that's a lot more than Root, and therefore it's a little less accessible. Mm-hmm. Number three is Pampero. This was the windmill building game. This one came out, it shipped, you know, around the springtime. It has been okay. People don't hate it, but it's not really, like, it's not up to, like, the Vital Lacerda level of production that they gave the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the Ian O'Toole artwork, it's got the big stupid box. it's got, like, it looks like something from Vital Lacerda, and it's about as complicated, but it's not as good. And so I feel like it kind of faded away pretty quickly for a game this chunky and big. Ratings wise, it's like a 7.5 on BGG, which is, I feel like, kind of the death knell for these heavy Euros. If it's not in the high sevens, low eights in the year that it comes out, it's probably not going to stick around too long. But I do have a copy on my shelf, and I have not gotten around to playing it, which maybe tells me something as well.
This was one, again, like you said, as far as hotly anticipated. People were looking at this, and then it came out, and I heard nothing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's kind of weird. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Someday I'll play it, because I have it, and it's really big and hard to ship, so I'm never getting rid of it, but I have not played it yet. Imperium Horizons is the third release in the Imperium series from Nigel Buckle and David Turchi. Added a whole bunch new factions to play through. So this is like, you play as a historical or sometimes mythical faction. So in this time we get things like the Japanese and the Mayans and the Polynesians, but you also get Martians, because why not? And it's a one to four player game, but it's really like a 1 to 2 player game, like a card driven thing, which makes sense as a Turchi game. I have this. I have not gotten around to playing it, even though I really want to. I really liked Classic and Legends, but the new factions I've not gotten to yet.
Yeah, I haven't played this. I'm kind of sad about that, because, like I said, we talked about this before. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And was really interested in it. And now I think the Star Trek version came out recently. So
try that.
That's definitely going to be the one I'm going to be getting to the table soon.
This very much seems up your alley from what I've played of it. I'm like, it's tableau building, it's multi-use cards, it's
I heard
Civilization-ish.
I heard it's CCG-like.
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rules are really poorly written, and I was really hoping Horizons would have better written rules.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It's the same rules. They're terrible. Some of the worst rules. So I've gotten stuck on it a few times, because there's very few components, but then you go through the rules, and you're like, what is this saying?
There's a lot of symbology on the cards. There's a lot of...
There is, and the rules do a very poor job of explaining it. So... Yeah. You got that to look forward to.
Yay.
Yay. Find a good video. That's what I had to say to that. Number five is Unconscious Mind. We both played this a little while ago. Good game.
Good game. A lot of people have been talking about it. It's out of all the games that we've talked about. I mean, at Drama's Edge, I think, like, landed and created a crater for a couple of days. But Unconscious Mind, surprisingly enough, I haven't been bringing it up. You would think I would. But other people have brought it up. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. This is a tough one, because, like, you brought it down, I played it, and I was like, it's good. I think I like that a lot. But it didn't, like, hit me over the head. Like, sometimes you play a game, you're like, this is brilliant. It was more like, I need to play it more.
Sure.
And I haven't, because you own it, and I don't. And so
we're going to try to get Will to play it, which...
Yeah.
There's an upcoming convention, which we'll talk more about in the new year, because if we talk about it now, you'll forget about it. But me, Anthony, and Will will be there, and we will play Unconscious Mind, and... I don't know. We'll have a fourth seat open if somebody wants to join us.
Yes, please. All right. Number six is, I mean, it seems like vaporware at this point, but who knows? Stellaris, Infinite Legacy. They were still showing this off at PAX, but by all accounts, it doesn't exist. So who knows?
This was another torturous kind of situation as far as, like, this is what I want as far as a tabletop game is concerned. And am I actually going to get this?
No.
And At the last second, I did not back this, because there was nothing out about it when the crowdfunding was up, like, nothing out about it. And there was, like, one video by random person who was like, this is going to be amazing. And I'm like, but what is it? And he's like, it's going to be amazing. I'm just like, show me something. This is a video. Yeah. Why am I watching you a video hype something up that you do not have in front of you? Like, this is so, this is all red flags. With the exception of Academy Games is an excellent company, period. This campaign, man.
Dude, it's, so this campaign ended almost 4 years ago.
Oh my God. Jeez.
Yeah, it ran in March and April of 2021.
Wow.
And they're still posting that they're working on it. We saw the prototype.
So the prototype
bits at PAX.
Mm-hmm. Looks good.
But at this point, even if they were working on it full speed, they're still a year or two away from shipping it.
Wow.
So it's going to be like 5 years late.
Well, it space travel for you, man.
$2.5 million campaign. It's crazy. Like, I don't, yeah, people are mad.
Yeah. I think Academy Games is one of the best tabletop companies as far as the games that they produce out there. But I think historically, they've always had a problem with their crowdfunding.
Yeah.
If you remember back on some of their games.
Yeah, Agents of Mayhem was also a bit of a mess.
Yeah, that was a thing. And there's been some issues.
Yep. So that's a sad one. Number seven, though, back to the happy ones, Dune War for Arrakis. Great game. I got this in over the summer. I played it a bunch. Haven't played it since like August, unfortunately, despite multiple attempts to. But it's really good. It's War of the Ring, but with Dune. But it all makes sense thematically with Dune. So I've really had a blast with that. And despite playing it like, you know, a dozen times, I still haven't really thrown the expansion stuff in. So I really want to do that.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing this with you. It still amazes me that Dune board games have been crushing it.
I know.
Like, I don't understand where or why, but I guess obviously as a game industry, as far as our people's concerned, like, beyond. Right? Like, just wow.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So that's a good one. Number eight, also a great one. And when we talked about it last year, I don't know how excited we were. I think we might have been still making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Slay the Spire, the board game. If there was any game I saw a lot of people carrying around at PAX, mm-hmm. it might have been this one. Because they had a lot of copies and everybody was picking it up because it has been generally hard to find. So it's Slay the Spire, the video game, but as a board game, and it's fantastic. It does a really good job of interpreting it.
Yeah, this reminds me of when Riot came out and with a board game, and you're like, no, this is not going to be good.
Not
going to
work.
And they just weirdly rolled a 20.
Yeah.
It's just like nat 20 on this. You're just like, huh? This is good? And it's like, this is exceptionally good.
Yeah.
So... yeah, no, good job. And they just, I think I sent you the video, Slay the Spire 2.
Yeah, that's exciting because, like, A, Slay the Spire 2 will be fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
But B, maybe we get new factions for this.
That would be fantastic. A nice little expansion to go along with the new playable characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
All right. Next up, we have Clank Legacy 2. I don't think either one of us is a Clank Legacy person.
No, I haven't played. I've played a lot of Clank. I've played so many different versions of Clank. One of the people at a game day is a big Clank person. They have not played the legacy versions, sadly. Yeah.
But I know it came out. I saw people carrying it around.
Mm-hmm.
So. Metal Gear Solid, the board game. There was a pre-order. I don't think this is shipped yet. I've not seen it around. I feel like I would have seen this at some point.
Yeah, it was a hotly anticipated game from our friend Chris, who a couple of weeks ago was supposed to be on the episode when we did the 12 days of gaming, but he got sick, so he was not able to come on. But hopefully everything's better, and he'll come on and rant and rave more about it this.
Yeah, yeah, just popping it up on BGG, it seems like it is showing up for some people. Some people have it in hand. So I love me some Metal Gear Solid. Emerson Matsuchi, great designer. So,
and keynote speaker.
Yeah, that's true. we should mention that.
We'll talk about that stuff at the end.
All right. We don't need numbers. Next up, Undergrove. Undergrove was the new game from Elizabeth Hargrave.
Mm-hmm.
So this was
Wingspan
crowdfunded, game. Right? Was this crowdfunded?
I don't think it was. Okay. Let me take that back. We should actually check before we say things.
Yes, it was.
Yes. So, I was like, no, because I think it was AEG.
It was, but they...
but then they did crowdfund it.
Yeah, they've been doing that more. Yeah. So, I don't know. it seems like some people are playing it. It's out there, but I also think there's a digital implementation, correct? You can play it online. So that might also be part of what people are playing. I have not played this. I have not. The big wave of mushroom games. I'm not a big mushroom guy.
Oh, you're not a fun guy?
No, not a fun guy. So I don't know. I will try it at some point. I did not love her butterfly game.
Mm.
So I'm not as excited about this as I would have been if that hadn't come out first. But we'll see.
I think AEG did a decent job of promoting this. And obviously Elizabeth Hargrave is a genius on multiple levels. So this should have been a slam dunk, but I think certainly the theme kind of made it a little hard for people, despite the fact that I think AEG did a very good job as far as production's concerned.
Right.
They really, it looked very good. And I think they made it as welcoming, as opening as they possibly can. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't have the punch that Wingspan did.
Right. All right, next up we have Molly House, a new game from Whirligig Games, which is the company owned by Cole Whirly. This is a game about the Mollies of 18th century London. So the gender-defying... It's a fascinating game for 2024, especially because it is historical. It was a finalist in the Zenobia Awards, which is like historical games, back in 2021. And it's just very cool that it got picked up, and we're seeing this game that represents not just the queer community, but like specifically the queer community at a time that we rarely get to see that represented. So I've seen this game at a couple conventions now, very close to done. They've been working on it. So looking forward to seeing the final version.
Yeah, we circled the booth a couple times. It was packed. And like I said, other than our friend Eddie, who got a chance to kind of jump in there and get a demo of it, I haven't been able to get close enough to it because, again, all the attention's been getting.
Yeah. I know that people had some funky wigs on, right?
I saw the wigs. They had a whole wig shop kind of thing going on there. So people actually playing the game with the wigs on.
Yeah. all right. Next up, we have The Elder Scrolls, Betrayal of the Second Age. This is the IP Elder Scrolls game that Chip Theory Games is doing. So it's a big old sprawling map. You're wandering around. You got the chips. It looks like Too Many Bones, but Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
I haven't played it. We weren't invited out, so I can't say anything about that, but that's what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, that's their system.
Yeah. So it's still out there. I think now it says it's coming in 2025 anyways, so this did not come out this year. But a lot of people did get a chance to look at it. Some people went out and visited them. So there is stuff going on.
There you go.
15 or next up here, Nocturne. I really want to say these numbers. I gotta
you can say the numbers. People are okay with that.
Yeah.
Numbers.
Nocturne. Nocturne was the new one from the team behind like Calico and Cascadia. I didn't like it very much. I sold it pretty quickly. It's got beautiful artwork. It's like these like fox mystics. So
yeah,
it's animals, but it's like this really. It's Beth Sobel, but like just doing this really cool nighttime fantasy look. But the game itself I didn't really enjoy.
Yeah, it seemed overly abstract for what it, you know, what
it's
trying to be.
And all those like the flat out game series, they are abstract, but I feel like this one it was doing a little too much with it. Like you got Calico and Cascadia, Knitting Circle, whatever. Like those are all pretty simple. Like there's cats on a quilt. There's animals in the wild. Whatever. Verdant, you're growing plants. But this was a little bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a grid and you're moving pieces to do things, but it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the thematic gameplay, so to speak.
Yeah. Cards are pretty, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're beautiful.
We got Star Wars Unlimited, Spark of Rebellion. This is the new CCG that did really well early on. I mean, I think it's still doing really well. My son loves it. We've played a lot with the two-player starter sets. All three sets that came out in 2024 have a two-player starter set.
Great.
All three of them are very good, and it's just been amazing. We haven't had to spend any money on this game. Going into 2025, they seem to be moving away from that.
Oh, no.
We have to buy the decks separately. So you get a pre-made deck for the new set that's coming in March. You can buy each of the decks separately, and then you don't necessarily have all the bits you need, which is what everybody else does, but I'm like, they're stopping the two-player starter sets. So it's fine. I think with the three we have enough, but at some point, if he wants more cards, it might cost me some more money.
So. Yeah, no, it's a surprisingly good CCG in a market full of CCG. So give them props for even trying to do this. And it's a good game on top of which again, surprising, just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's I have not played a lot of CCGs in the last few years. This one stuck.
It's great.
Again, probably because my son likes it, but Inventions, Evolution of Ideas, Vital Lacerda. Mm-hmm. We think we talked about this not too long ago when I reviewed it. It's good. It's not in his upper echelon of great games, mm-hmm. but it's better than some of the lesser games we've gotten of late.
Yep. I think that's it.
Yeah. It's above Escape Plan and Weather Machine, but maybe below the rest.
Sure.
MLEM, Space Agency. So it's like the cats in space game.
Of course it is.
Yeah. So this was Reiner Knizia, and Reiner Knizia has been really busy lately. I mean, he's always been busy, but I feel like his stuff's popping up a lot of late.
Yeah.
His licenses are going around. Old games are coming back. He's making new stuff like he always does.
They're like, let's add art to a brilliant design for once.
Right. But like weird art. Weird art with cats. I have not played this. I know a couple people who have, and they're like, it's cute, but there's not a lot to it. And I'm like, that's exactly what it looks like. So
this is going to be part of a larger animal universe with apiary.
Yeah, right. All these bees in space. You got cats in space. Oh, man.
Pigs in space. Yeah.
Yeah, right. All the things in space. Galactic Cruise, still not out. This is the one that they were shopping around last year. So we were talking about it and the crowdfunding campaign, which they did end up running this year, but the game is still like another 6 to 9 months out.
I've seen it in a lot of places. Their publishers are really working hard to get exposure for it.
Right.
And still have not played it because, again, it is definitely a very crunchy little bit. Again, this is from what I hear. I have not played it. Definitely crunchy, but a little obtuse as far as the rule book is concerned. Yeah. So those are not a good combination of things.
Right.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
All right. Kelp. This is the really beautiful looking two-player game of sharks versus octopus.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's out, but really the only thing I know about this game, I haven't played it, I didn't back it, is that there was a very early bootleg copy on Amazon that had like a little Lego shark in it.
That's so funny.
And they're apparently all over the place. All these bootleg copies are on eBay, they're Walmart. Like,
aww.
So if you're buying a copy online, make sure you're getting a real copy of this game.
Oh, come on, guys.
There's a lot of fake ones floating around.
So not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we previewed this game. It looks great. Two-player, asymmetric, great production. Yeah, I'm hoping to catch this when it hits retail.
Yeah. Marvel United Multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
This is the newest version of Marvel United. I really haven't dug into much of this stuff. I ended up backing enough of it because I'm a big dummy. But I really haven't had time to dig into it. I really want to pull out like the Galactus and play through that, and just haven't done it yet. So it's, by all accounts, it's very good. There was so much stuff, though. So much stuff.
Yeah, I backed the box, but I have not opened the box.
Yeah.
The box remains boxed.
Same.
Maybe on Boxing Day, I'll unbox the box.
There you go. That's what Boxing Day's for. Unboxing your boxes.
Ooh, we should do that. That should be a thing we push for. We should talk to the Canadian government. Like, let's just switch that.
Can we change out? Yeah, forget, we're not giving gifts to servants. That's not a thing anymore.
No.
We're opening board games.
Opening board games.
Yeah.
They can open,
while watching soccer.
They can open Obsession because it's servant based.
Ooh, yeah.
There you go.
There's probably a card for Boxing Day in that game. I should go check.
Is there a game for Boxing Day? There probably is somewhere.
Probably. All right. Yeah. So Marvel United. But it did come out. I know that some people, though, on the East Coast for shipping just now got their copies.
Oh, no.
4 months. Because they every month they're like, oh, there's another container coming. And people are like, I thought you said that was it. And then the next month they're like, there's one more.
I'm going to say this very quietly, just in case it does not come true. The best thing about this game is it's done.
Yeah. Ooh.
There's
ooh.
No more expansions.
Why did you say that?
I'm saying it very quietly. They didn't hear me.
That's no good, man.
No. They're done. It's
yeah. Complete, sir. No, it's okay. They're doing Batman now. That's fine.
Yeah. You guys do your DC thing. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Don't do anything more interesting. Okay, please.
Yeah, no Star Wars. No.
No, don't. No. Dude, no. The hell,
we've man? Already said it. We jinxed this years ago.
Damn it, bro. That's not cool. That would be so bad.
Yeah.
That would definitely be a Death Star in the middle of the board.
Oh my gosh, I would back so many.
Stop it. Stop people getting ideas.
Like, hey, Margaret, you know how I bought that $500 game last year for the ring? I bought another $500 game, but it's Star Wars. It's okay.
It's okay, kids. We're all going to live in this giant box now. It's fine. It's where we live.
Have fun doing it. It's going to be fun.
That's right.
All right. Next up is Cascadero, which is the game upon which was re-implemented Cascadito.
Mm-hmm.
Reiner Knizia. I just mentioned that. Ian O'Toole artwork, though. So it's this big hexagonal grid. You're building stuff out. It's very abstract because it's Knizia, but pretty. It's very pretty. Like these old illustrated medieval artwork from Mr. O'Toole. So
the man knows his craft, I tell you.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I know some people got their hands on this. Some people have been playing it. I don't know. Something about Knizia games, it doesn't like excite me until I play them. So I almost never back them in advance, but looking forward to finding it at some point and trying it.
Sure. Same.
Tales of the Arthurian Knights. I know we talked to Andrew Parks about this several times, mm-hmm. and it was coming out, but it was right here at the end of the year. So I have not seen a copy yet. I don't think they had it at PAX.
I didn't see it at PAX. If it was there, I didn't see it.
Yeah, I don't think they were there as a publisher, which is weird because it's only like an hour or two away from them.
Yes.
Big old box of cool stuff, though.
The publisher wasn't there.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so, but yeah. I found that weird.
It was weird. Yeah. It didn't make general sense. There was a couple of weird companies that were not at PAX.
Yeah.
AEG wasn't there either, wasn't it? That was a thing. Not sure why, but yeah.
Yeah.
WizKids. All right. They were there last year.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, I don't know. That's weird. They're so close. Why would they not be there? I don't know. When it shows up, I'll check it out. But it's mm-hmm. too early. Only a handful of people have it. And I think it's pretty much sold out everywhere anyways, even before it's gotten anywhere. Sure. So, next up, we have Huang. Huang is a re-implementation of Tigris and Euphrates, another Reiner Knizia game. This time, Ancient China. So it's kind of leaning into the Yellow and Yangtze, but even more miniatures, because why not? Published by Phalanx, who does a lot of really beautiful, amazing war game productions. This is some of that. So I don't think either one of us likes the game this is based on, so I don't think either one of us tracked it down and played
it. Yeah.
So moving on. Star Trek Into the Unknown.
They've had a bunch of previews out there for the game. I don't think the game is out officially yet anywhere to kind of pick up, and obviously WizKids was not at PAX,
right? So we know nothing.
Yeah, I've seen a couple preview videos, so they've sent it out to a couple people for mm-hmm. early kind of review, and it is another kind of massive, somewhat complicated flight pad system.
Mm.
And the good side is the production looks brilliant from WizKids, and if you're a Star Trek fan, certainly this is something that you'd definitely want to play, which
right.
I do. They, you know, when Attack Wing was such a big thing, so they're kind of like, hey, what if we made it more complicated but higher quality? And yeah. We will see now.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Unreliable Wizard was a little solo-only game. It was on GameFound, mm-hmm. Originally published in Japan. I backed it. I did not like it very much.
Aww.
It's just like a card flipping game, and you have to get the right patterns. So it's like a little bit of mitigation based on building out your card deck, but mostly it's just like, hopefully the right things come up in the right order. And mm-hmm. then if they don't, oh, well, that was 15 minutes of my life. So didn't dig it very much, but it was only $20. So not the end of the world.
Gotcha.
Dungeon Cart. This is from the makers of Boss Monster.
Brotherwise Games.
Yeah. So it I can't remember if this actually came out this year. It was on Kickstarter last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked really cute. I almost backed it, and I chose not to. But
oh, you backed everything else before that.
It's true. That's true. But it's just one of those games. I'm like, I think my kids have outgrown this, but it looks cute.
Cute.
Evacuation. We played this early in the year. Vladimir Succi came out back in February. I think I was the hottest on it, and I wasn't super hot. It was like lukewarm. So it was a thing. We spent most of a day learning how to play it.
Yeah, it's a trip. It's a game where there's a lot of, I don't know, maybe this is a little unfair here. It's somewhat similar as far as like what On Mars, as far as the back and forth thing where you're trying to send the, you know, the resources back and forth to a new planet.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the ships are moving. Everything else is going one way, and then you're trying to settle on one place. It's a really cool idea. I think the problem with the game is it's like really difficult to teach because everything feeds into everything else. There's no like start and end point. So it probably requires multiple plays with the same group of people, and that just wasn't going to happen because no one was impressed by it. So it's an interesting idea. It was just every Succi game is an interesting idea.
Sure.
They don't always work. Rats of Wistar, Simona Luciani and Danilo Sabia. Very excited about this. It was very cute and colorful. It reminded me of like the Rats of Nim. And it felt pretty flat for me. You didn't play this, right?
I did not.
Yeah, so it's worker placement, but it has a couple tweaks to it. Like you're moving through the house and trying to unlock different things, and there's like a little like rondelle style wheel for the worker placement part of it. I don't know. It did not click for me at all. You can go back and listen to my review. This came out back in like late summer, early summer, maybe. But it has moved on from my collection.
Gotcha.
Luthier. This is, I think they just finally ran the campaign for this a few months ago, and it was stupid expensive. Remember?
Yes.
This was Paverson Games.
Yeah, they
so
had
so much money.
They had backing levels that I've not seen in forever.
Yeah.
You know, up to hundreds of dollars for the game.
Yeah, and it's like cool stuff that you got, but I'm like, I just want the game. Like, and I played Distilled, and it was fine, but it didn't need all the fancy stuff. I don't think this one does either. So, I didn't back it. It is not out yet, so I haven't played it either.
Yeah, I was really excited about it, and then I saw the backer levels, and I was like, cannot afford that.
No,
but I wanted to.
Yeah, I will play it someday. Yes. It will be cheap in retail, and I'll pick that up then.
But you won't have all the fancy stuff.
No, it's okay. I don't need the fancy
stuff. It comes with a real composer if you back the highest level.
Yeah, yeah. You're just going to show up in your house and serenade you.
It comes in the box, man.
Oh, that poor guy.
I know. Hope shipping is not delayed. That would be bad.
This big, big, giant crate with holes in it.
That happens.
All right. Next up, Cascadia, the flip and roll and write games. These were fine. I honestly didn't see the purpose of them. Because Cascadia is money. Money is the purpose. Well, like, because like they're also doing like Cascadia Junior, and I'm like, it's not a complex game. I play this with my children. It's very simple. Mm-hmm. So we don't need a junior version. We don't need a roll and write version. I didn't love the roll and write version. It was kind of messy, actually. So that's a thing. They weren't very expensive, thankfully, but I was a little unimpressed.
Okay, makes sense.
Defenders of the Realm 2.0.
Yeah, we just mentioned this.
Yeah, I know this was on your radar. I was never going to back this, but I know it kind of crashed and burned.
Yeah, I was really excited about this. Obviously, Defenders of the Realm, big fan. It was my number one game at one point. And we had talked to Eagle Griffin many years ago. And I think it might have actually been the publisher himself. And was like, this is going to happen. We are going to produce this. And we're like, yay, you're going to produce this. And then they did not produce it. And it went to the mechanics, at least went to Freedom 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to back that, but that was also a insane, crazy, multiple layer level campaign pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
And I think originally I was backing it until it got into like 400 some odd dollars. And I was just like, and I'm done.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, The campaign came out. It was a, you know, like a more kid friendly slash family friendly version of it. And then they wanted all the money for the miniatures. And people were like, but the game itself is, a lot of it is having those miniatures on the board. So the miniatures were kind, I mean, the campaign was crushed under the weight of the cost of the miniatures.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of little minion pieces in the game, and they create these really beautiful miniatures for the minions. But again, production and cost and such.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Like, there's a lot of games where I'm like, did you really need miniatures? This is not one of them.
Yeah, you need, it's that kind of game. You need the miniatures on the board. Mm-hmm. The miniatures really play a pivotal role as far as, you know, area control and what they do and how they act. And certain colors are more important than others. I think when the original Defenders of the Realm came out, it had a very simplistic single hooded figure because, again, costs. And this, they were like, we're going to give you top-notch things. And everyone's like, yes. And they were like, it's going to cost top-notch money. And they were like, no. So, yeah, it's a thing. It happens.
All right. Next up, Sincore, the Pride of Mansa Musa. This came out back in January. I got it. I played it. I loved it. It's in my top 100 now. We'll talk about it more next week, I think.
All right. I'll trust that you'll do that, man.
Yeah, I'm going
to
do it.
I will be on the episode just because to listen to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I was going to skip that episode, but now.
Oh, man, that'd be a long time for me to talk by myself.
I was back on board, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you not doing that. Civolution, the big Civilization game from Stefan Feld. This one fell a little flat for me, too. I gave it a play, and I do want to play it more, but it was a little overwrought for me. Mm-hmm. Like, it was Stefan Feld's point salad-iness, but also into the mechanics, where it was just, like, so many different things you could do.
Sure.
It started to gel after a play or two, but it was a lot. Like, the barrier to entry was a lot.
Understood.
Blueprints of the Mad King Ludwig. This was a drawing-type game for the Mad King franchise. I have not played this. Did you play this?
I have not played this. They kind of. I love Mad King Ludwig, but they lost me after the Super Deluxe Massive Edition. So I've not come back.
I'm not a big Ludwig fan, so I did not play this.
Okay.
High Season, a Grand Hotel Roll and Write. Not interested in this either. I'm assuming you neither.
No, not so much.
It did come out. I saw that. Got decent reviews.
Okay, that's cool.
Down with that. Patterns, a Mandala game. I meant to play this. I don't know what happened. I had a friend. He had a copy. We were going to play it, and then we just didn't. But Mandala is a great game. It's a little two-player game. And Patterns is just kind of a spin on that.
Sure.
So, unfortunately, did not get a chance to play it.
Okay.
Dragon Eclipse. This was the big old Awakened Realms, I think, one- or two-player game. It was ridiculous and big and overwrought for, like, what is essentially a solo game. Mm. But, you know, that's where we are now. And I don't know if it's shipped or not. I think some people have copies, but they've been talking, you know, it seems like it's still floating around out there.
Sounds good.
The Veil of Eternity. Did you play this one?
I've played this a lot. This in person, played it on Board Game Arena. The artwork is fantastic. It's nice, kind of cutesy fantasy. And also at the same time, it's kind of a interesting little bit of a brain burner, because basically you're in like an auction situation for cards. And then at that point you're picking cards, and then you have to summon the actual cards to your table. Mm-hmm. And there's only so many slots available based upon a certain turn, but there's different classes. So they interact differently. So it's a good game, but it certainly suffers as far as, like, do you know what's in the deck?
Right.
Like, what's different combo possibilities coming out there? But yeah, it's a good game. You can play it for free on Board Game Arena.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'll check it out. I haven't played it yet. So, next two games are both the Duel games. We have Dwarf Romantic and Quacks of Quedlinburg. Both got two-player only versions. I've not played either, but by all accounts, the Dwarf Romantic version, not great. It's a cooperative game to start with, so why you need a Duel version, I'm not sure. And then the Quacks of Quedlinburg, I always say burger, not burger. Quacks of Quedlinburg, by all accounts, is a little bit better, but similarly, the gameplay's fine at two. So
I'm going to tell you this again, man. Money.
Money. I know. It's money. It's money.
Have you met Money? I know.
Yeah. Wolfgang Warsh is like, I need a new car.
That's right. How can I get a new car?
Yeah. The publisher's like, well, we could use more Quedlinburg. He's like, all right, I'm on it.
Imagine if they released every game at like just a single player count.
Right. this is the three-player version. This is the four-player version.
I mean, they do a solo and they do a two-player. Why not keep going?
Yeah. That's funny. That one I want to try.
Yeah.
Dwarf Romantic, not interested. Battle of Versailles is another two-player game. We saw this at PAX last year, and a lot of people were talking about it, and I feel like it just kind of disappeared after that.
Sure.
So I have not seen it since.
Neither have I.
But it's also a very specific, particular theme about, like, the 1973 fashion show in Versailles.
Yes.
So if that's not your theme, it's probably not going to hit your shelf. And then after the game is no longer in the hotness anymore, it's going to dissipate, which is what happened.
Gotcha.
Pirates of Maracaibo, not surprised, but this one kind of faded away and it did not look like it was selling particularly fast at the Capstone booth. I mean, Maracaibo is fine and all, but this didn't look like it did much different in terms of like length or complexity. So,
sure.
I don't know. It's just another spin on that formula that is constantly being iterated on. And there's multiple other designers here, too. So they're adding different layers to it. It's got good reviews. I just mostly I'm describing why I didn't play it.
Gotcha.
And Wormspan. We both played this. I think when we made this list last year, this had just been announced.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out shortly afterwards. And it's good. I like it better than Wingspan. I've played it more, for sure.
Sure.
Maybe it's because of the theme. Maybe it's just because of the egg mechanic, which I think is an interesting way to do action economy. But I had fun with it.
Yeah, no, it's a good successor. It was being played everywhere when it came out.
Right.
So it was one of those games that early January, February, March kind of thing. It was everywhere. And then like during the summer, I was hearing a lot of conversations about people going, hey, which one should I play? And that was the kind of, you know, conversation that was built around it. So
that's it. Yeah, that's where we're at now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's all the games that we put on our list last year. We now also had some expansions and re-releases.
Ooh.
So even faster rapid fire, because we often don't play these. Right. El Grande reprint.
Again.
Yeah, they did it.
Again.
people seem happy about it.
Yay.
I still have never played El Grande. I got to do that.
No, man. It's a great game.
That's what I hear. It's mostly from you.
It's area control, old school area control.
Yeah. Cyclades, Legendary Edition.
Love the game. Wanted to back it. All the monies did not back it.
Yeah. Teotihuacan, City of Gods, Deluxe Master Set. I did back this. I'm giving you my old copy of the game, actually. And it's fine. The insert is terrible. They're replacing it. So, and there's some misprints on tiles, which they're also replacing.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, it's a nice giant box for the game.
Excellent.
War of the Ring, the card game, Fire and Swords. This just came out here in the fall. I've not got a chance to get six people together to play this game yet.
Yeah, we tried.
I think we will try to do that at Level Up next month.
Mm-hmm.
Terraforming Mars Prelude 2. I think we both boycotted this over the AI nonsense. So,
I love the fact that they finally just owned up to like the one expansion that actually did the thing that it was supposed to do.
Here's more of that.
They're just like, but we can literally name this anything and it'll still, you know, sell. And they're like, no, we kind of burned that bridge with the expansion. So
right, yeah.
They're like, this is not a thing. It's a thing now. Do
this
it.
This is literally an expansion to the expansion.
Yes.
Just like, come on, guys. Obsession Characters expansion. This came in. I got my nice fancy coins. Very excited about those. Haven't played with it yet.
Now you're as rich as the queen.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we saw the people over at PAX. They were very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a nice booth over there.
Mm-hmm.
The Night Cage, Shrieking Hollow.
Yeah, this was the extra scary addition to the already scary Smirk and Dagger game. Very abstract, but it is kind of scary.
Yeah. Through the Desert, the all-play edition. Through the Desert, a great Reiner Knizia, again, game.
Mm-hmm.
This was a new version, which people don't seem to like as much, but it's a good game either way.
Yes.
Kalamala, the new version of that, very pretty.
Very pretty.
Nucleum Australia, just a new map, added a couple little tweaks. It's fine. The second expansion for that, which we didn't know about yet, just came out. I got a copy in Court of Progress. Mm. Haven't played it yet.
Nice.
Hamlet by the Lake, expansion for a game I don't think either one of us has played yet. Nope. Marvel Champions, Age of Apocalypse. They also had another one that popped in there at some point. I don't know which one we're on now. But, a lot of content from Marvel Champions, although they have slowed down a lot in the last few months. Maybe they're running out of ideas. And then Shipyard, the 2.0. I mean, it's the same game, but new printing.
Gotcha.
So I have not played that. I've still never played Shipyard in general. I don't know if you've seen the new version and have thoughts.
I've seen the new version. I really do not like the artwork.
Oh, okay.
I am very crass about the artwork there. I don't think it was an upgrade. I think it's a downgrade, if nothing else. It looks very AI driven. Mm. I don't know if it is. I'm not trying to make any disparage about the thing. It's just, it looks very flat and very bland. And I was sorry because Shipyard's a great game. I've been championing it for many years. It's my top 100, typically in my top 10. And the new version should have brassified it.
Right.
And it just kind of fell kind of flat. But I'm hopeful that more people get it to the table because it's Rondell's, man. It's Rondell's for all days.
Rondell's for days. They should have just made it in space.
They should have just made it in space.
Everything in space, guys. That would have been cool.
It does, you know, like seriously, like the other versions out there, why not make it in space?
It in space.
Man. They missed the shot.
They could have done it.
It's true. Well, Anthony, do we have time for a little more reflection?
I believe we do.
All right. Well, before we get, you know, we talk about some great games. It was a great year for games, but we want to just kick back a little bit and talk a little bit about, I guess, the podcast. It's been a year for BGA.
Yeah. Yeah. We've done a lot of stuff. No, it's always a great to get to the end of the year and look back and see what we've accomplished. And it's, you know, we've had a lot of great guests on. We've done a lot of interesting new ideas. And we have a lot of cool ideas going into next year.
Oh, yeah.
Which we're going to talk about more in the next 2 weeks. But it's just been a good opportunity to kind of explore not just like what we've historically done, but also like how the academic side of things is influencing our approach to games mm-hmm. and how we think about them and how we talk about them. We hit 500, obviously. That was huge. So that was probably the biggest thing and also the biggest chunk of episodes. So
yes. The top 100.
12 episodes kind of devoted to that run with our Hall of Fame, our top 100, and then our listeners' top 100 games. Mm-hmm. So that was all very cool.
Yeah, 11 years.
Yeah.
Over 500 episodes. And like just everything you said, Anthony, great guest, great different features. We try to make stuff as uniquely different as possible each and every year. And just take a look back. Obviously, the holiday season, you're going to have some time driving, you're going to have some time with family. And what better way to spend time with family than putting your headphones in while you listen to an old episode of PGA?
Yeah, yeah. Spend time with family and us.
There you go. We're family. We're fam. Yeah. We're fam.
Right.
Yeah, it's been a great year. We're so glad that you've joined us and continued with us. And we're growing. We're growing a lot of listeners, a lot of people. Thank you for all that social media support. Thank you for following us and supporting us. Definitely on, you know, YouTube, our numbers bumped up. Still want to hit some major numbers on there. So if you haven't already, you know, followed us, subscribed on YouTube, please do. And Patreon people have been amazing. It's been a very difficult year financially, and because of them, the podcast continues to chug on, man.
Yeah, no, we really do appreciate that a lot. Like you even your $2, if that's all you're backing, like it's helpful. It makes it possible for us to keep doing this. There's a lot of expenses that go into this, so
yeah. And it's it's a podcast that Anthony and I are talking into mics, but we know that you're there and
right.
just hitting us up in any way, shape, or form that you can, or telling other people makes a big difference to us, and we appreciate that, because again, we want everyone possible to join us at the table, because everyone possible is always welcome.
Right.
And Anthony, Board Game Academics, obviously the journal came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, bro.
Yeah, no, we've been talking about Board Game Academics for 2 full years now, more than that, and this was the year in which we launched it.
Yeah.
March 1st we launched issue 1. It was amazing. A lot of great feedback, a lot of just being able to see people out there like using these articles, reading these articles, sharing them with each other has been amazing. Obviously, we're doing issue 2 right now. We're in the middle of, the peer review is done and it's back with the authors for revision. So we're going to have issue 2 launching here in just a little over 2 months, which is crazy, which just reminds me how much work I have to do. So editing. But yeah, you know, we spoke in Long Island. We spoke in New Jersey, Dex Light, with our conferences here. We spoke at PAX. So we've gotten out there a lot, too, and been able to share kind of our thoughts and research with the world, along with the authors who are joining us. So that's been really fantastic.
Yeah, thank you all for coming out. We got some packed houses for the presentations, which has been fantastic. And we've collected and connected with a lot of nonprofit organizations out there who are all about tabletop gaming and built a little network as far as that's concerned. So we'll have more information as that goes forward. And Victory Point Essays, Anthony.
Yeah. So our new endeavor has launched. This was a cool thing. Like, and there's a few reasons why we launched it. Like, one, it's an opportunity for people who maybe are not like fully immersed in higher ed and academia to contribute to the scholarship around games and how they're used, right? You know, you hear academic journal essay or article, and yes, we help you and we walk through the process with you, but it's also a tremendous amount of work, right? Like, you're talking 4,000 or 5,000 words, which is like 15 to 20 pages. You're talking like all the research and citations you need, the presentation you have to develop. It takes multiple months. There's peer review involved. And so some people aren't ready for that. And we've heard that from a lot of people. Like, I have an article idea. I don't know if I want to do all of that yet. So it was really cool to be able to launch, with the support of Game Pathways, this new channel, which did launch last week. So if you haven't checked it out yet, check out Board Game Academics, and you can see Mel Gomez-Erickson's article on the Blood on the Clock Tower, and just get a chance to kind of see where we're going with that. And we're really excited for the stuff we have in the pipeline for next year, because it's a cool opportunity to get new voices, people into the space who maybe have not done traditional research or have and just haven't been exposed within the space to the audiences that are out there. And it's a lot of fun. So it's just one of those cool things that comes out of this. Like, you do something, you do the academic journal, you hear from people what they want or what they need or what they feel is missing. And you realize, we realize, like, hey, we could just do that. We could just launch a whole new thing. We could have this column. We could have another channel for people to publish. And we did. And that's been really gratifying to see so far as it goes up. So, really excited for 2025, because we'll have a bunch more of those essays soon.
Yeah, check out the Board Game Academics website, because there's a lot of great content that Anthony put up there, and a lot of new videos from our presentations, just a lot of great stuff to check out. Mm-hmm. And I guess to kind of wrap things up, Anthony, tabletop gaming industry.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like we talk about this all the time offline, mm-hmm. a little bit online, but all the time offline. Like, where are we going? What are companies doing? What are we seeing? I think the common thread the last few years has just been everything's crowdfunded. And that continues. Mm-hmm. That hasn't changed. Everything's in a giant box. Everything has a bunch of bling in it. We don't need all the bling. but I feel like we're also starting to see a little bit of splitting up of those things.
Sure.
Like, the ARCS campaign is a great example of, like, you don't need to buy it all in the same box. You're not spending $400 for all the stuff. Yeah. Not a bunch of miniatures. You were getting these opportunities to, like, buy pieces of things and maybe upgrade it later with new opportunities to add on to other campaigns. So hopefully we continue moving that direction. I don't know if we will, because enough people are still willing to spend $400 on a blinged out new version of Puerto Rico, a game that up until a year or two ago, you could buy for $20 on Amazon.
Sure.
And I'm like, that's cool. The game's pretty. That's a lot of money for a game that you already own. Right.
Yeah.
Says the guy who just spent $500 on War of the Ring.
But no, we won't say that. We didn't hear anything.
Yeah, no, nothing happened there. yeah. So it's, I don't know. There's a critical mass. Like, how many people can own these big games? Right. And eventually people run out of space. And then what happens? Like, it feels like a little bit of a bubble has sure. developed. And I think as a group, as an industry, I think we're starting to understand that and maybe recognize that there's a bubble there. And so the question is, will the industry respond to that or just keep running until the bubble bursts?
Yes.
And people stop backing these things or companies start to fail, which hopefully we don't start to see. But, you know, these things are very expensive and there's a lot of money invested in them, too.
Yeah, I think there's... You can have the super upgraded pieces, you can have the super gigantic box, but I think Jeff last week kind of brought up, you know, the best point possible is it really just comes down to communication, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is this and why is this? And I think the campaigns that are producing these massive games really need to do a better job on communicating what it is that they are bringing to the table. Because again, there's a difference between backing a $50 game and hoping it's good versus, you know, a $350 game and hoping it's good and waiting, you know, 2+ years and so forth and so on that goes along with it. So I think all of these things can be and should be available and possible. I just think overall the communication, because again, tabletop industry, while it's been around for a while, is still relatively a new and growing independent industry. So the standard operating practices or best practices is just not really there yet. And I think that someone needs to come along and write all those things down and put those things there, because I think some of that's getting lost and there's just a lot of noise out there.
Yeah.
That being said, tabletop gaming has never been bigger.
Yeah.
And there's actually an article that someone pointed to me that came out, I think it was today, the extremely offline joy of the board game club, that's out on the New York Times. You can read it online. And it's about the Gen Z and millennial populations playing tabletop games and old fashioned kind of games at the table, because everyone is looking for that real personalized connection. And obviously we all know this because you're listening, right? It's tabletop games. That's the answer. It's there.
Right.
I'm glad everyone's catching up finally. That's a thing. So yeah, that's happening. And again, purchasing those big super deluxe games is just a very fancy invitation to bring people to the table. So we want to do more of that. And I think the industry is thinking about it. And I know we had conversations with Gamma at PAX Unplugged. And the conversations and the feedback was they hear us and they're going to do, the board is going to do new and different things. Mm. And we even spoke to Asmodee, biggest tabletop company, at least in the smaller market, right? They're not Hasbro and not Mattel, but like for the smaller independent stuff. And they had the same message that like, they're going to do things different. They're going to communicate more. And we are 100% open to that. Like, we want to have that communication and that conversation back, because the greatest thing about tabletop gaming is that we're so small that we can actually talk to people and we can collaborate on designs and organize plays and campaigns and stuff like that. So we need to do that again, because I think historically there have been people who have been in charge that came from different industries that have not known or understood tabletop games.
Right.
And have applied lessons from different markets onto tabletop games and have just not worked at all.
Yeah.
Wizards of the Coast, I'm talking to you, by the way.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens with Asmodee.
Yeah. Everything will work out in the end, because people and gamers out there are fantastic. And
yes,
they are the core and the heart of this. And as long as the people who are producing the games and design the games understand that, I think everyone's going to have an excellent time. So I certainly hope that everyone gets as many games to table as possible. I think for many of you, Christmas is the big holiday. So, you know, when this comes out, we're wishing you a Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, I think, happens at the same time this year. And Happy Kwanzaa. We'll be back just before the new year, but I think the episode actually comes out in the new year, Anthony, the BGA Awards.
It might come out New Year's Eve.
Might come out New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So listen to the best of instead of the ball drop. Just saying.
Yeah, that's right. You'll have game of the year right at midnight.
We used to do that too, way back on the episodes. Remember, we used to do the countdown, the New Year's countdown way back when. We used to have the audio clips for that.
That's funny.
We might have to bring that back, because this just worked out as far as timing's concerned.
Go dig it up.
All right, everyone. So that's everything for this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all. See you at the table. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.